Figure I'd get out of here. Good evening. This is a presentation on the mark of the beast. It's a subject that somehow I got drafted into giving a presentation to the August Ministers Conference on. And some of you said that you wanted to hear it also. They did not chew me up and spit me out at August Conference with all those ministries, so I decided I'd go ahead and share it with you today. And so that's what our subject is. Our objective, I know why you came, what you expect to learn tonight. Maybe you would like to know by the time we leave here exactly what the mark of the beast is, what it's going to look like. But really, the mark itself is not the issue in this matter. You know, marks are really easy to come by. Would you be satisfied if I just put one up on the screen like so and said, there it is, don't get this tattooed on your head or your hand, and sat down and walked away? I don't think you would be completely satisfied with that that scenario. And it would be too easy to do such a thing. Really, when we talk about the mark of the beast, the mark as we know it, we say the mark of the beast, it means this mark belongs to the beast. And it is common knowledge that you may not have thought about it, but it is pretty common that we as people, individuals, mark our things. We mark our possessions, we mark our property. Probably everyone in this room, if you picked up your Bible somewhere, if I picked up my Bible, I'd find a mark on the front of my Bible. It says Brian McIndoe. That tells everybody who this Bible belongs to. My Book of Mormon is not that way, but if I turn to the inside of it, there's my mark. There's my name. Again, I mark my possessions. And so it's very common for us to mark the things that we have, the things that we possess. So the issue here really is not the mark. And I know that's what you maybe come for, is the mark of the beast. But the issue is not the mark. Rather, it's the power and the authority and the ability of the beast to convince the world to take his mark on them. Some mark on them that says they belong to the beast. And that's what the issue is how is that beast going to get the world to take that mark upon him? So, first thing we got to look at is, who is this beast? Where does he come from? And we find out in the scriptures, when I was looking through the scriptures, that there are several beasts mentioned in the scriptures. Some of them are referred to, making it easy, as the first and the second beast. So if we can count to two, you should be able to follow along with this, I hope. We're going to look at the first beast to start with. The first beast, John the Revelator, he wrote the book of Revelation. He lived on the very threshold of the apostasy. And we've talked about the apostasy. I hope you understand that. We had instruction given on that here recently. He was able to see the tendencies of the church in his day getting ready to apostatize, ready to fall away from the true gospel of Jesus Christ. And he wrote several letters that we can read and know about to the churches, explaining to them how they were falling away, how they were losing the faith, how they were not following the doctrine of Jesus Christ. And so he was very concerned with this. Then came a vision to John the Revelator from heaven, and it rested upon him. And we can read in Revelation 4, 1. It says, after this I looked, and behold, a door was opened in heaven. And the first voice which I heard was as it were a trumpet talking with me, which said, come up hither, I will show thee things which must be hereafter. So here we see John, the Revelator, a man very concerned with the gospel of Christ and with the church and with the future at stake. John was interested, very interested in what was going to occur, what was going on at that time. And he had a chance to have a glimpse at the hereafter. And with the future of the church at stake, he was certainly interested in seeing that. Revelation 12 ended. And we read this in some of our studies. It ended with Satan, who was described as the dragon, being angry with the church and going to make war with the church and against all those people who kept the commandments of God. And he was going to do his work. This dragon was going to do his work through what we know as the beast. which are his agents here on earth. And so we're going to look at Revelation 13, 1 through 10. And John was seeing this, and it says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads a name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were the feet of a bear, and his mouth is the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him power, and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things of blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in the blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, then and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and overcome them. And power was given him over all kindred and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose name are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patient and the faith of the saints." The first thing the reader, when we read this here, the first thing the reader should see when reading this vision that John had in the book of Revelation is the relationship between John's vision and the vision that we can find in Daniel. Daniel also had a vision many years earlier. And let's take a look at this vision. It's found in Daniel 7, verses 2 through 8. It says, "Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion, and had eagle's wings. And I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked. And it was lifted up from the earth, and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second, like a bear, and it raised up itself on one side. And it had three ribs in mouth of it between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh. After this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. And the beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth, and it devoured and brake into pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had ten horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and the mouth speaking great things." Now, obviously, those two visions sounded somewhat different, but there are many, many similarities between Daniel and John's visions here. And we're going to take a look at those similarities. The first one, Daniel saw four beasts rise up out of the sea from where the wild beast of Revelation came from. They were the same. The first beast Daniel saw was a lion. The second was like a bear. The third was like a leopard. While the beast of Revelation is like all three. John simply combined the monster of Daniel's vision into one animal, as we read, "And the beast which I saw like unto a leopard, and his feet were the feet of a bear, and his mouth was the mouth of a lion." And of course, when we look at this, what are these things portraying? It kind of told us in Daniel, but in the book of Revelation, it didn't really portray what it was saying. But a leopard, it is distinguished for its bloodthirstiness and its cruelty, and thus becoming an emblem of fierce, tyrannic power. While the bear, the strength of a bear actually resides in its feet. At the same time, we understand it too to be very fierce and cruel qualities as a bear's strength. And the lion is made to seize and hold its prey, not to let him go. It's indicative of the character of an animal as a beast of prey. And so these are the qualities that Daniel described his beast having. John saw all these qualities as a bloodthirsty strength, ferocity, a symbolic of the power that was intended to present here in his beast. So continue on with our list. The fourth beast in Daniel 7, it had no name. Neither was there a name given to the beast in the beast of Revelation. There are 10 horns grew out of the fourth beast of Daniel, and that is the exact same numbers that the beast of Revelation had. There grew among the 10 horns a little horn which had, and I'm going to quote, a mouth speaking great things, spake words against God, and made war with the saints. This feature is really the most prominent feature that we're going to see in the book of Revelation, where it said, and there was given to him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power is given unto him to continue 42 months, and he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. So we see this continuity between these two beasts with this mouth that speaks blasphemies against God. The next one, the beast of Daniel's vision, is going to wage war against the saints. And that is a mirror agenda for the beast which John also saw, where John said, and it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindred, tongues, and nations. Again, the book of Revelation, John told us that the woman, and we know that is the church, would flee into the wilderness for 1,260 days in Revelation 12:6. And the beast would have power to continue for 42 months, which is equivalent to 1,260 days or 1,260 years. Or we also know that to mean times, times, and a half of times. Those have all been explained to us. During this time, the beast would make war with the saints. And the similar report, once again, comes from the book of Daniel and his beast. It says, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given in his hand until a time and a time and a dividing of times. Again, it's the same time frame of 1,260 years is given there. So, a conclusion really can be drawn, if you will, here as we look at these two beasts. Undoubtedly, these two are referring to the same time period, the same event that's going to occur in history. So, is there anything in history that can teach us about the identity of this first beast that we're talking about? Re-examining some of the points that we looked at here, we learned that both of these prophecies said that this beast is going to come out of the sea. That must mean something to us. Out of the sea prophetically signifies a multitude of nations and tongues. It's something bigger than just a single entity. It's a multitude of nations and tongues. Papal Rome has always been supported by a multitude of nations, all the nations. It wasn't a little small place. It's throughout this world. They have great numbers throughout the world, and their support comes throughout this world. The beast had what's called seven heads, which are seven mountains, according to Scripture. If we read Revelation 17:9, it says, and here is the mind which hath wisdom. So he's saying, anybody that's smart knows this. Okay, and I didn't know it till I read it. So I wasn't smart, but it's going to tell me. It's going to make me smart. Here is who has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains of which the woman sitteth. And so it tells us clearly that seven heads means seven mountains. And we know that the headquarters of the Church of Rome is situated at Rome. And what is Rome known as? It's known as the seven-hilled city. And so that kind of fits with the seven heads that are there. From amongst the horn grew a little horn, while three of the original horns were plucked out. The little horn had eyes like a man and a mouth which speaks great things. In seeking an interpretation, it was shown to him, in Daniel 7:17 and 2:13, it says, these great beasts which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. The fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it to pieces. Since the fourth beast, as we just read here, represents a kingdom, it would make one believe that the first three also would also represent kingdoms, even as we read here, seven heads represent hills. If they're talking about horn being a kingdom, then it would be consistent to continue with that. So these four horns are four kingdoms. Since the fourth, ancient history points out that the kingdoms, those kingdoms that which are, they're talking about, is Babylon, Media Persia, Greece, and Rome. And we can also find in Jeremiah 4:7 that Babylon is referred to as a lion, which gives us credence once again that this Babylon was a kingdom, and it fits this image of the beast as being the lion in the image. The beast describes her has an understanding of having strength and brutality, and Babylon, Media Persia empires, and the Roman Empire are very much like that. A cat-like vigilance of a leopard, the crushing power of a bear, the roar of a lion. These descriptions that they're given to the men of that day and those visions are all too familiar for the shepherds of Palestine. They understand the power that comes with a lion and a bear and a leopard. They understand those things. They understand the cruelty and the power which comes to them. The ability to reach out there and grab and snatch hold of its prey and hold it with its teeth. And so it was very familiar to them when they used the descriptions of lions and bears and leopards. The fourth beast. This one had 10 horns, which signifies 10 kingdoms. If we stay with the horns representing a kingdom, it would be 10 kingdoms that will rise up. Verse 24 said, each of these 10 kings shall have a kingdom. It came right out and told us that each of the 10 kingdoms would have a king. And true to prophecy, Rome was overthrown and her dominion was rent into 10 kingdoms. This occurred about the 5th and 6th century, and the Lombard kingdom was the last of the 10 kingdoms. So the little horn and the man of sin that we can read about in 2 Thessalonians, which has these same qualities of the beast, points to the papacy. I'd like to read that revelation in 2 Thessalonians. It says, let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, and the son of perdition, who opposes and exalteth himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Remember ye not that when I was with you, I told you these things, and now ye know what withheld that he might be revealed in his time. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work, only he that now letteth will let, or hindereth will continue to hinder, until he be taken out of the way. And then shall the wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume in the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and lying wonders, and all the deceivableness and unrighteousness in them that perish because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And of course, when we look at that, we read about this man that goes into the temple of God, demands to be worshipped like a god, and then they start giving this descriptive things down here at the bottom of this reading that he's going to be talking blasphemies and unrighteousness. That fits the description. But who is this man sitting in this temple demanding to be worshipped like God? It's really impossible not to have the Roman power suggested to our minds when we read such a thing as this, as a mighty persecuting power that went out and demanded people to worship their way, to worship their leader, the Pope, and to follow their ways. And if they didn't, many times they were put to death and they were slaughtered. We know that Rome has civil and ecclesiastical authority, both having the same origin. They both come from the same place. Civil power and ecclesiastical authority coming from the same place. That civil and ecclesiastical power was both aimed at the same object. One was sustaining the other, and both combined to keep up the dominion of the enemy of God and man. Rome power was made up of 10 subordinate kingdoms. Remarkably, it occurred at the same time when the papacy was about to rise up. And we read in there that this was going to occur just about the time of the falling away. And that was the time that the papacy began to rise up, and with this two-horn, this ecclesiastical and civil authority began. The 10 kings that we read about received their power from Rome, as is stated in Revelation 17:12. And the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings and having received no kingdom as yet, but received power as kings 1 hour with the beast. So again, they're talking about these 10 kings are going to receive their power from the beast, and we know these 10 kingdoms received their power from Rome. And so that would kind of point to Rome being that first beast. Then we have a second beast. Revelations 13, 11 through 18. I'm going to read. It says, "And I beheld another beast come up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. And he exercises all the power of the first beast before him, and causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image of the beast, which had the wound by the sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, and the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark on their right hand or in their foreheads." And that is a description. Oh, I'm sorry, I got a little more to read. "And that no man might buy or sell, save that he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and this number is 666. Which, if you don't know what a three score is, that's a six also. 666. This second beast, although was different than the first beast, had the same agenda. And that was to cause man to worship the dragon. We already understand that the dragon is Satan. And so we had a first beast come, then a second beast is going to come along after this first beast is injured but does not die. The second beast is going to come along. He is going to be different. He is still going to be an agent of the dragon or Satan, and he's going to cause the world to worship the dragon, which we can clearly see by comparing these two, how they have the same agenda to do the work of the Satan. Characteristics of the two beasts. The first beast, it comes out of the sea, out of the commotion, the agitation of the nations, a new power that springs up from the disturbed elements of the world. It has seven heads and 10 horns, and upon the 10 horns are 10 crowns. In its general form, it resembles a leopard, and its feet are like those of a bear, and the mouth is like a lion. It receives its power and authority from the dragon or Satan. One of the heads of the beast is wounded to death, a blow which is aimed at really the authority, which would seem to be fatal when you just look at it, but there is some power which brings it back and causes it to recover and to survive. And although the wounds seem to be fatal, the beast never does die. Contrary to what some teach, that he was a resurrected man and or an incarnation of the devil. That is a common teaching, that he's just a resurrected man. And that's not true. The second beast is not a resurrection of the first beast because he never did die. So there is a distinct second beast here. Though the beast efforts and the world renders homage to the dragon by outward adoration and worship of the beast, this beast is considered incomparable. It said, "Who is like unto the beast?" He's considered invincible. Who is able to war with him? This first beast, the beast is endowed with a mouth that speaks great things and blasphemies. This power is arrogance and reviles against God. The time he is in to continue is 42 months, or 1260 days, or 1260 years. The ninth thing that he does, he makes war with the saints and all holy beings. The tenth is he overcomes them. Then he is worshipped by all who dwell on the earth, whose names are not written in the book of life. And finally, those who fight against him with a sword will die by the sword. Now, looking at the agenda of the second beast, to compare it to what we just read about the first beast. The second beast, it comes out of the earth. It has a different origin than the first beast. It didn't spring up out of the troubled elements of nations and strife and peoples, but it came up from something solid, out of the earth, like the form of the earth, which we would consider solid ground. And so he came out of something solid. Number two, it had two horns like a lamb, but it spake like a dragon. It apparently, is going to be, the second beast is going to be mild. It's going to be gentle like a lamb, even inoffensive, if you will. But under the surface, it's haughty and arrogant. Number three, it coexists with the first beast. The effect of its influence is to induce the world to give reverence to this first beast. Number four, it has the power to perform great wonders and able to deceive with miracles. This power is manifested in restoring an image of the beast which head was wounded, and by giving life to that image, and it causes those to be put to death who will not worship that image. Number five, this beast causes a certain mark to be affixed to all the people of the world, creating a restriction where those who will not take this mark are going to be unable to sell or to engage in any type of business transactions without having this mark on them, thus gaining control over the power of the world commerce. Number six, the second beast. The power of this beast is known by the number of 666. And John here supposed that this number, telling us this number, John thought that we would all automatically understand what this beast was. He thought that would be sufficient to identify this beast. But he will have that number. So I just told you how these two have the same agenda. But now let's compare. Let's take a look and see how these two beasts resemble each other. Number one, they have the same origin. They both receive their power from the dragon or Satan, and they are agents to deal with human affairs. They are Satan's agents to deal with us, to deal with the saints, to deal with the people of the world. Number two, they have the same extent of power and dominion. The first beast, it said, all the world wondered after the beast, and they worship the dragon and the beast. Almost all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him. Or the second beast, it says, and he exercises all the power of the first beast. He causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. He sets up jurisdiction over the commerce of the world. Number three, the two beasts, they do exactly the same thing. The first beast, the dragon gives power to the beast. He has a mouth which speaks great things and blasphemies. Even blasphemy against God is given him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, to win over them. Whereas the second beast, he exercises all the power of the first beast. He does great wonders. He maketh fire to come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. He causes that as many that would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he claims dominion over all. And number four, these two beasts sustain each other. The first beast's head was sustained a mortal wound of power, becomes exhausted, but does not die. Whereas the second beast causes an image of the first beast to be made and worship, which revives the first beast's power. This second beast is quite significant to us. He is the one who's going to come into this world almost inoffensively, but causes man to actually take the mark of the beast upon their bodies, and to worship the first beast, or ultimately worship the dragon or Satan. This second beast, he has two horns like a lamb, but he has the power of the beast, the power of the dragon. The Pope shows two horns of a lamb. He has the civil and ecclesiastical powers. He has those authorities. Those two kingdoms are his. The Pope has put himself up as the vicar of Christ upon this earth. Now, I've heard that for years, so I finally had to tell myself, well, if you're going to do this study, you're going to have to look up and see what a vicar is. It's got to be something really cool and really point to this. And so I looked it up, and it means substitute. How perfect. The Pope is telling people he is a substitute for Christ upon this earth. And we know in the Scripture there is nowhere that tells us that there's ever going to be a substitute for Jesus Christ. There will be no other substitute. The Pope, derived from the medieval Latin term, which is Papa or Father. We know who our Father is in heaven. His official titles are Bishop of Rome, Vicar of Christ or Substitute of Christ, Successor to the Prince of the Apostles, Supreme Pontiff of the Universal Church, Patriarch of the West, my favorite, primate of Italy. Archbishop and Metropolitan of the Roman province, sovereign of the state of Vatican City, servants of the servants of God. His false doctrines and cruel deeds show him to belong to the dragon, really, and not to the Lamb. If you look at history and the things that the Pope has done throughout the world. But he comes as a religious leader and inoffensive. The second beast carried on the interests and the designs of the first beast, is what we're told. He does this by lying wonders, pretend miracles, which should deceive the people and should cause the former beast to be worshipped in his new image. Some of those things that he does are excommunications, anathemas. Probably not all of you know what that word is, but it is a formal ecclesiastical curse. It's a curse on the people. It means severe censures, which they pretend to cut man off from Christ. If you don't do it this way, we will cut you off from Christ. You're no longer able to worship Christ. You'll be cast out. And that's some of the things that the Pope has done. Cast those taken by his power over to the power of the devil is what he's pretending to do, and deliver them over to the secular power to charge and kill those who they really cannot corrupt, allowing no one to enjoy natural civil municipal rights which do not worship the beast or the papal power, or make an open profession or subjection to the obedience of the papacy. And really what that is, how that is accomplished, is really by receiving the beast mark or his name or the number of his name on your forehead or your right hand. Historically, Pope Martin V, which reigned in year 1417 through 1431, he has prohibited Roman Catholics from suffering what they call heretics to dwell in their country or to make bargains or to do any type of trading or to hold any civil offices, which is clearly an interpretation of this power. It's the onset of this type of power, this type of idea within the Catholic Church and the papacy. Worship here. I've read it several times. I hope you picked it up. It says he's going to cause man, he's going to cause you to worship the dragon or worship the beast. That's what they want you to do, is worship the beast. And so it's a very interesting point. When you look at the Greek words in the Bible, translated in our King James translation, consistently there's one Greek word used for worshiping the beast. And we'll take a look at those where they're used here. We're going to look at it again in Revelation 13, 12. It says, "And he exercises power of the first beast before him and causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed." In Revelation 16, 2, "And the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast and upon them which worshipped his image." In Revelation 19, 20, "And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet, who wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive in the lake of fire of burning with brimstone." And then the last one, "And I saw thrones, and they that sat upon them, and judgment was given unto them. And I saw the souls of men that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus, for the word of God, which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their forehead or their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. This Greek word here, worshipped, I tried to say this before, and I'm going to write it this time. P-R-O-S-K-U-N-E-O. That's how it's pronounced. That is the Greek word that is used. Proskuneo, something of that nature. It means, when you look up this word, worship, it means to kiss. To kiss. Like a dog licking his master's hand. Prostrate oneself in homage. It is used only any other time in the Bible. The only other time it is used is for the proper worship of God. The only other time it is used is when you worship God properly. But they're saying here that he caused man to worship the beast exactly like you are to worship God. This does bring to mind an all too common of an image of a man bowing down and kissing the ring of a pope. It says, "He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity." This is a warning to you, to me. Don't worship him or be cast into the pit with him at the last day. You cannot worship him. You cannot kneel down like a dog licking his master's hand and worship him. And I think you know what that means, like a dog licking his master. How excited your dog gets. If you don't understand this concept, come over to my house sometime and see how excited my dogs get when somebody comes over. They jump up on the chairs, they howl, they turn in circles, they just get all excited. They bring you their favorite toy. You know, they're that excited, they're that intent on being with you, to be a part of your life, for you to reach down and touch them. They love you that much. And that's how you're to worship God. That's how the beast once worshipped. But that's not what we can do to him. Moving on, horns are a symbol of power. And we see that the second beast had two of them, like a gentle and domestic animal. The second beast is a spiritual teacher. His power has certain softness. And, boy, I wrote this word and I knew I could say it. You know, and domesticity, did I say it right? Domesticness. About it. That's the way he seems. He's kind of a docile creature. You know, he's easy. He's soft. He's easy to deal with, which is a stark contrast, really, from the first beast, which was a fierce and swift and powerful. But this second beast, he has the wisdom of the world. That's how we can identify him. He has the wisdom of the world. His speech is as a dragon. It's deceiving people with lies. But unlike the first beast, his lies are done with subtleties and feigned persuasions. He deceives by the means of miracles. And you know, what are they talking about here? It's counterfeit supernaturalism. It's causing people to worship him. You can see it here. It's big here. I suppose it's big everywhere you go. But we can look at such things in the paper and the news daily about appearances of Mother Mary. Mary figurines crying blood. Just to name a few of many that you see on the news daily, and seeing the miracles that are beyond human power to do, what that does is cause people to believe that there's some presence of divine power in that place, and therefore they worship that way. The second beast is a false prophet, using the wisdom of the world to draw people unto him. The wisdom of the world, making politically correct statements. Examples: women in the ministry, acceptance of homosexuality as an alternate lifestyle, and acceptable behavior, even in the ministry, abortion be a right of choice. And we can see many of the churches leading that way, and we can see the Pope today making some of those stands and doing those things, and accepting those things, very subtly doing them. Not just coming out in a raging war against those things, but subtly allowing those things to happen. We know this subtle wisdom of the world is the trait of the dragon, or the old serpent. We read in Genesis 3:1, "Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord had made." That's where Satan started at the very beginning, was in subtle persuasions of mankind. Thus we see the warning in 2 Thessalonians when they were speaking about this man of sin. It said, "And with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth." Key word here. They receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this cause, and here's what the Lord is telling us. He says, "For this cause, God shall send them strong delusions that they should believe a lie." They're parting from the truth. And because they decide to walk away from the truth, that which is given to us to understand, to know, that's been written, if you choose to walk away from it, it says God shall send them strong delusions that they should believe the lies that are told to them, that all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Two horns, like a lamb instead of ten. It is really a wolf in sheep's clothing, as described in Matthew 7:15, when the Lord spoke and told them ahead of time. He deceives, the very thing Jesus said that would happen in Matthew 24:24, when this Antichrist would come into the world. Of course, one of the questions we will face most often is the same one that my daughter Holly probably posed to me not too long ago. She asked me, she says, "Dad, tell me something." I knew I was in trouble. She said, "Why would good people, good Christian people, people who go to church, people that have the Bible, not see it? Not see it coming. Not see the falseness and accept the beast. Why would that happen?" And I found maybe the best answer may be illustrated in a recent news article that I'll read to you here. And the title of the article is "Methodists Leave Over Sex Issue." And it says,